League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Micro Brew. It's getting harder and harder to remember the last time the Milwaukee Brewers lost a baseball game. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined in the house by my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Todd Rosiak. The Milwaukee Brewers had an incredible week. We had the All-Star game. We had the draft. We had three more games against the Dodgers. The Brewers beating the Dodgers three more times at Dodger Stadium. They are the first team since the 2006 World Series champion St. Louis Cardinals to win six or more games to sweep the Dodgers in a season series. I, once again, am a little flabbergasted. Can't believe it. The Brewers won three close games at Chavez Ravine. They head to Seattle. Todd Rosiak, you'll be going to Seattle. Can you, Todd Rosiak, can you promise the listeners of Microbrew that you will be bringing home a George Webb burger promotion success story? They only now need to win two more games for the George Webb phenomenon to get triggered. Can you do that for us, Todd Rosiak?
I can, and if it doesn't pan out, I will post your email address for all complaints. How about that? And send out your phone number, too.
That sounds good. It is amazing to me how many people in Milwaukee fall in love with the idea of having George Webb for some reason. Every time the Brewers get up near, you know, 9-10 wins, which has happened a few times in recent years. It is not my first choice for dining options, but it is still a fun thought that the Brewers are now two games away from that hallowed mark. They have 10 consecutive wins, seven going into the All-Star break, three more coming out of it. A crazy game Sunday, back-to-back games really where they had to hold it down in the ninth inning to preserve a one-run lead. That was off of a 2-0 win against the Dodgers on Friday night, right out of the break. This is still the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Brewers are now tied, or they're ahead of the Dodgers. They're tied with the Cubs for first place in the National League Central for the best record in baseball. As we record this, the Tigers are playing as we record this Sunday night. They may very well win and retake that throne by a half game. But Todd, there's no scenario on God's green earth where I thought we'd be discussing, can the Brewers get a first round playoff bye? Can they win, not only win a division, could they have the best record in the National League? I continue to believe that this is just that they're playing out of their minds, that this is not sustainable stuff. But the longer we go, the more I have to admit this might just be sustainable. This is really late May, you know, mid May that they've been playing at such an elite level. I kind of ask a version of this question every time, it seems like, but as you look at this team, how do you explain it? I mean, their pitching is great for sure, but like, how do you explain what you're seeing out of this Brewers team? It feels like they are getting every clutch hit, every advantage seems to be going their way. All the players at the bottom of the lineup that were struggling earlier in the year are now some of their most important players. What do you say about this? How do you explain it?
I think you kind of said it. I mean, every aspect of the team is delivering. You know, the pitching, I think, is what makes the difference here this year as compared to other years. The vast depth that they now have in the starting rotation. They have so many options. You know, the Quinn Priester trade that everybody poo-pooed back in April is looking like highway robbery now. You know, the Miz obviously coming up. That's a big factor. And everybody else. Brandon Woodruff is pitching well. You throw in some timely offense, and especially from those guys 7, 8, 9 in the batting order, typically, you know, like you mentioned, Isaac Collins, Caleb Durbin, Joey Ortiz, all three of those guys had really big series in Dodger Stadium. And before that, I mean, they've really been on a tear for the last 6 weeks. Defensively, they've been playing well. They're stealing bases. And I think it comes down to something that Pat Murphy talks about quite a bit. He talked about it after the game today. And it's one of those kind of cliche coach speak type things that you roll your eyes at typically. But in this case, I don't think you can really do that anymore. It's just like the belief in themselves, you know, like this collective unit has seen what can be accomplished when they're all pulling together on the same end of the rope. And doing what they're supposed to do. And all of a sudden they're tied for the best record in the major leagues. It's incredible. So incredibly fun to watch, incredibly unexpected. And now we've got, you know, what, 2 weeks or so till the trade deadline. Obviously there's going to be some moves made. Who knows what those will be. But at this particular point in time, this is a team that is, should be, should remain for a while, the story of baseball. And just kind of ride the wave and enjoy it is what I say.
Collins and Durbin, I think, are emblematic of something we haven't seen a lot of with the Brewers. And we've mentioned this. They don't have a good track record developing bats, especially midseason. You know, guys who are at the big league level, you don't see a lot of these things where guys start out slow and then, you know, come on stronger, figure it out. That's what's happened with both Caleb Durbin and Isaac Collins, who is a fine player in the minor leagues. But I don't think anybody could have foreseen a scenario where this minor league infielder could be an elite, you know, elite defensive outfielder and key contributor who is, like, again, speaking of clutch hits, seems to be coming up big in every spot. Caleb Durbin, you could, I mean, I think it was pretty clear earlier, you could not have convinced me that was a future major league third baseman. You know, it was just like he's the best of what's around when they called him up, and you just keep him there until you could find a better spot for him at a better third baseman. And now that's just not the case. He's solid defensively. He is delivering offensively. And you mentioned the trade deadline. This is where it gets confusing, because I assume if this team is really serious about being among the best in baseball, that they would want to make a pretty big splash, that they don't need to improve on the edges. They have the depth right now, especially in the pitching staff. They should be able to go get somebody and really, you know, improve things. But we could come up with a reason why they should improve a team at every trade deadline. And quite frankly, they usually sit it out. I don't know if this is a different situation because they have a bona fide chance here to, like, really to go to the World Series. Let's just say it. Like, they just beat the Dodgers 6 out of 6 times. That's a team that perennially can contend for the World Series. How can you think the Brewers are not in that class at this point? But the trade deadline is 10 days away, and I have no feel for what's going to happen. So look in your crystal ball, Todd. What is going to happen? Are they going to make a splash, or is this going to be like all the other trade deadlines? Because that's just how they choose to operate.
I mean, it's really hard to say at this point. Like you said, the depth is there. The chemistry is there. The guys are performing. And I can also say that the Brewers will be very hesitant, in my opinion, to deal or want to deal any of their top shelf prospects. You know, this is a long-term deal. This is bites of the apple, as I love to keep bringing up and tweaking Brewers fans. But you know, this is a long-term prospect for the Brewers as far as winning goes. You know, if you have to trade one of them, maybe to go out and get an elite player that you feel fills a hole, maybe you think about that. But you know, I think that they're just going to try to maybe kind of fill in around the edges a little bit. That's my feel. I don't have haven't really done any deep investigating at this point. You keep hearing the same names coming up. I think Eugenio Suarez is going to be incredibly in demand if the D-backs decide to ultimately sell, and there are going to be some big teams going after him, so the price is going to be high. You know, maybe they have to settle a little bit and go for a Ryan O'Hearn type. Another name that keeps being brought up that I don't really kind of like O'Hearn. I don't necessarily see a fit, but as you know, the Brewers will think outside the box. You know, maybe Josh Naylor, somebody like that, you know, left-handed bat. He's got power, but he also hits for average too. So I don't know. I mean, they're always in the market for bullpen acquisitions, as we know. It hasn't panned out well in recent years, but that's always a spot where you can bolster yourself. And I'm a firm believer. I wrote this in the mailbag this week, that in my opinion, they do need to go out and get some sort of shortstop / veteran utility infield help. And who knows what the price tag would be for that. But, you know, hey, you know, Monasterio has been playing pretty well here the last couple of weeks. But as, you know, it gets, you know, you get closer to the stretch run, the pressure increases. You want a guy that's been there before, preferably, and a guy that maybe can make a little bit more of an impact than an Andrew Monasterio type. So I would say those three spots in that order, if I was putting the shopping list together, I think I'd probably put the shortstop ahead of a reliever at this point, but who am I to quibble?
I like how you said they'll settle for Ryan O'Hearn, who, by the way, started the All-Star game for the American League as a designated hitter. You know, I agree with you. I don't know if there's a fit, and I do like sort of your hierarchy there. I mean, some of that is assessing what's for real and what's not. You know, at this point, there's enough of a sample where I think they probably have to say Caleb Durbin is this for real. I don't know if I feel like Andre Monasterio is going to play as well as he has, and he's already in sort of a utility role. And Joey Ortiz is interesting. Like, I feel like every week is a new story with him. A few weeks ago, it was like, oh, Joey Ortiz has rallied, has rebounded, and, you know, that's made their lineup so much dangerous. And then last podcast, it was more like, are we at the point where they have to move on from Joey Ortiz? It's just not going to happen. And then he changes his stance coming into Los Angeles and has a very productive series. Now, that's just a couple games, but he has the big home run on Saturday night that played into a one-run victory. He's coming through. He's still playing really solid defense. He had two defensive plays that ended games in Los Angeles. One play was spectacular, bare hand, and then he had a tough play to end Saturday night's game. He's been important, you know. And I still believe they could probably stand to upgrade at shortstop, even though there aren't a ton of obvious names out there on the All-Star or on the trade market. But I wonder where they think about Joey Ortiz. You know, for me, it changes every week. I don't know ultimately where their assessment would be. What is your assessment of Joey Ortiz? Is he is he the guy that you'd rely on if this team is a playoff and, again, World Series contender? Is he the shortstop you think they can roll with?
I mean, as of right now, he's going to have to be. I don't know that it's feasible. And again, I haven't really done a lot of investigation at this point, but I don't know how feasible it is to be able to go out right now and swing a trade for a starting shortstop. I don't know who's out there. I don't know what teams have made what guys available. It would be interesting to kind of look at a list potentially, but I just don't see anybody that, you know, would be out there that would make sense at this point. And I think that the Brewers are overall happy with the job that Ortiz has done. Obviously, the offense has been up and down, and, you know, we'll see if this latest change with his stance, if that – you know, sticks, and if that leads to some more long-term sustained success. Defensively, it's interesting because you go by the two different metrics, the outs above average and defensive run saved. Outs above average really likes him defensively. Defensive run saved, he's not a very good defender. So the truth probably lies somewhere in between. So we're talking about, you know, average to probably slightly above average defender, if that's the case. He's made most of the plays, yes. So, you know, I feel like they'd probably be okay rolling with him moving forward. And if you can address another area, if you can somehow bring in a Suarez and work him in at third base along with Durbin, find another spot for Durbin. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different permutations that could take place. But as of right now, I don't see any signs or any reason to believe that the Brewers would be souring on Ortiz or looking to bump him out of that starting role.
There's a couple pitcher spots that interest me a little bit. One is what happens in this rotation. We saw Jose Quintana pitch on Sunday. It wasn't his best outing, but he's been solid. I mean, he's been exactly, I think, what you would have hoped for when the Brewers signed him late in the offseason into spring training. But Nestor Cortes has made a couple rehab starts, has looked really good, and he's kind of on the cusp of returning. I would venture that any decisions can maybe get put off here another week until they get into the throes of the trading deadline. And, you know, maybe it seems logical that they would trade from their starting pitching depth because it is so rich right now. But you never worry about a rotation spot, but then again, this is the third time essentially that they've had to make a really tough call. You know, with Brandon Woodruff and having to send Chad Patrick down, and you know, before that having to send Logan Henderson down, like, they got so many starters. I wonder what's next for Jose Quintana if they do keep him, or if Nestor Cortes ultimately takes his spot. And then, unrelated to the starting rotation, is what you mentioned, maybe a reliever. The Brewers always get a reliever at the trade deadline, and I think maybe a left-hander would be pretty good. Jared Koenig is kind of one of the main guys in that bullpen, but he does have a 1.3 WHIP. And that's pretty high. He gave up back-to-back, or not back-to-back, but two home runs in his one inning of work on Saturday night that turned a three-run lead into a one-run lead, made it a little dicey. I think maybe, you know, you could see a situation here where some of those back-end relievers get tired and, you know, they need maybe one more guy to supplement that. These are the pitching things I'm thinking about as we get closer to the deadline. How do you look at that? I'm more interested in the rotation stuff. I feel like that's still a really a question I don't know how the Brewers are going to answer.
Yeah, I mean, the rotation thing, it is going to be interesting. The Quintana-Cortez thing, you know, there's always demand. Those guys are always in demand at the deadline. Do the Brewers flip one of those two guys? It'd be really interesting to see them flip Cortez, winds up making, you know, two starts for the Brewers and then gets traded at the deadline. Crazier things have happened, but, you know, that again, those things tend to play themselves out. I'll be interested to see what the Brewers do, like how they're going to kind of monitor his workload and keep his workload within a reasonable amount, you know, considering he's going to wind up going well beyond what he's ever pitched before in terms of innings for a season this year. And then the bullpen, you mentioned a lefty. It would be nice to have another one, you know, Koenig-esque, but I look at what, you know, DL Hall did today. You've got Aaron Ashby. You've got, you know, those guys potentially, you know, high leverage situations. I don't know that I'd like them as much as Koenig, even with the ups and downs. But again, if there's somebody available out there and you can get him for a reasonable price, I definitely think you have to consider it.
Yeah, Brian Hudson, who was so valuable to them first half of last year and then kind of struggled and didn't really – it wasn't on the playoff roster. He has not – he's not looked great at AAA. I still believe there's something left in there, but it doesn't appear like he's on the track to getting back to the big leagues anytime soon. So if they – but you're right about Ashby and Hall. They have shown that they can go some, you know, some length, more so than maybe somebody who's really there for a short stint. But I think Ashby could work in short stints too. I think Ashby could work just about anywhere. So I do know they have some coverage there. Some injuries have popped up here for the Brewers. One that in particular is concerning, that's Sal Frelick, who injured his hamstring before the All-Star break. And then first game back, we found out that he was in fact placed on the 10-day injured list. I think the maximum days you can get retroactively is 3. So he's backdated a little bit, but he's going to be out for the week. They call up Blake Perkins, who definitely had an impact. I miss that casual center field play where he just quietly settles under fly balls and catches them, made the last out on Sunday when it looked like it could be a single and just casually trotted in and made the catch. I do love watching Blake Perkins play center field defense. And then Jake Bowers went on the injured list, and Tyler Black, kind of a surprise, I would say, because Tyler Black had struggled most of the season at AAA since he's been back from injury from a broken hamate bone. Lately better. So he's going to get another shot up at the big league level. But Jake Bowers being out means now both of their starting first basemen, Jake Bowers and Rhys Hoskins before him, are on the shelf. Andrew Vaughn has obviously been good, but better than good. I don't know. It's going to take a lot of sample there before I'm like, oh, Andrew Vaughn is a changed man. He's going to be the leader, you know, capable of playing first base the rest of the way. What are your thoughts on these injuries? It seems like neither one should be of grave concern, but what is the impact maybe of not having Frelick and Jake Bowers going forward?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Sal thing hurts, basically because he's been such a catalyst in the leadoff spot since moving him in there. I think he was hitting .313 since June 15th, I believe, was the day that he got moved up to the top of the lineup. And we all know that he plays terrific defense and just is a pest in general for the opposition. So, you know, losing him for any amount of time is not great, but to be able to plug Perkins in is actually really nice. The timing worked out there perfectly, as a matter of fact, and it's an easy fix. You just slide Churi over to right, you put Perkins in center, and you go forward from there. And when Sal comes back, then you can kind of reconfigure once again. The Bowers thing, it's interesting in that, you know, we've been watching his average kind of plummet as the season has gone along, and we know that he hasn't gotten a ton of opportunities. But I was looking at his average actually last night, and he's under 200 again, and that's an area that I had kind of circled as like, well, you know, it's kind of I don't want to call it a roster spot in flux, but you need more production. So is Tyler Black the answer? Again, if on the 40-man roster, he can play some first base. He gives you a little bit of versatility, play some outfield, left-handed bat. So we'll see what he can do. He's certainly battled injuries again this year. The guy has just not been able to avoid that injury bug since the Brewers drafted him, unfortunately for him. So a couple spots to look at, but the bright side is, like you mentioned with Frelick, is, you know, sounds like a week out, and then, you know, by the homestand, I would think sometime during that Marlins series. If he doesn't have any setbacks, he'd be back on the team.
Yeah, I again, a sign of what this team has built. Like, you can lose somebody as valuable as Sal Frelick and barely miss a beat because you have so many guys capable of playing great center field defense. I know Frelick plays right, but as the dominoes fall, you move Chirio to right. It's just this depth is crazy. They don't have Garrett Mitchell either, and they're still set. They still have two very credible center fielders on this roster, and heck, maybe even Isaac Collins can play out there. It wouldn't surprise me in the least. And same with first base, like Jake Bowers going out hurt. You know, it's not great, but like you said, neither of the first basemen were playing particularly well when they got injured, and they got Andrew Vaughn. That's worked out so far to shining degree. Ernesto Martinez is in the minor leagues and could be called upon. He's not on the 40-man, which is certainly why Black being the more highly regarded prospect anyway, that's why Black gets the turn first. But there is a plan C if it doesn't work out. So that's, you know, you look around the roster and you think, if this guy went out, would the Brewers be okay? If this guy got hurt? And there aren't many people where you'd say, well, that would really hurt them. That would really kill what they're trying to do because they just have this incredible depth. We have to talk about the All-Star game. I mean, that was kind of the highlight around baseball of the week. We got to see Trevor Megill get an out. Jacob Mazurowski worked a whole inning, gave up some loud contact, but got through the inning, got through the eighth inning, handed a two-run lead to the closers in the ninth, and then things fell apart, gave up a couple runs. We did see a All-Star swing off, the first of its kind. Some exciting stuff. National League ends up winning. Kyle Schwarber hitting three home runs in his three swings to help the National League win. That was really fun. Give me a takeaway or two that you had from the All-Star festivities, seeing Megill and Mazurowski pitch, seeing, you know, Freddie Peralta had that stand up to cancer sign honoring Bob Uecker, which was really cool. There was obviously a ton of buzz around Miz. I think it's a bummer Megill only got to face one batter. He's been so essential for this team, including this this series against the Dodgers. But what are your thoughts here on seeing Mazurowski and Megill in the All-Star game?
I mean, I think you hit on all of it. The Freddie thing was great with the Uke mentioned and the stand up to cancer. Kind of hit you in the feels there for sure, seeing that. Mm-hmm. You know, Megill getting the opportunity when he did his job, and then the Miz coming in and getting those three outs, good for him. You know, I mean, I can't even imagine how fast his heart must have been beating and how nervous he must have been. But I give the guy credit, you know, like just he everything that he's experiencing is a first moving forward. And the amount of pressure that's on this guy, you know, the Brewers are trying their best to minimize that. But it's just going to get worse and worse as the year goes along. He's handled it really well. He's kept a straight face. He's kept kept his chin up. You know, he hasn't had a lot of adversity yet. That Mets series, you know, he faced the music and, you know, obviously bounced right back and has pitched great ever since then. So he's checking all the boxes, everything that you could look at the guy and, you know, on the field, off the field, he's handling it all terrifically. Like a guy that has done it before. And obviously he's going through it for the first time. So again, we'll see how it goes moving forward. But to this point, very impressive young man. And definitely excited to be able to cover another one of his starts Tuesday in Seattle.
Yeah, that's right. What a test of someone's resolve to not only to be asked to the All-Star game after five starts, to be given the eighth inning in a two-run game. That's I mean, sometimes that's just how the lineup falls, but that's high pressure. And then you also have the situation where everyone is talking about you, not always because they think, oh, it's so great to see a kid throw 102 miles an hour. It's the question of whether or not he belongs there or not, which was the constant source of discussion going into the All-Star game because he just doesn't have the workload. You know, to acquit himself well, I thought was just like icing on the cake. Like, how can his confidence, you know, not have been helped a little bit by that, to know that he could hang and be in that situation, even in the face of, you know, I don't know if it's full adversity, to have the eyes of the media world at least on you, but it's not nothing. It's a little crazy, a little surreal for a guy who's just pitching in Nashville early in June. So I thought that was fantastic. I really thought he handled himself very well. You know, one thing that's coming up this week, you mentioned the series in Seattle, of course. The Brewers will need to win those first two games so that you can deliver on George Webb burgers. Yeah. After that, they come home to face the Marlins, and including that Friday night game, it's actually Friday afternoon, a 3 o'clock game on Friday. They will have this celebration commemorating the first 25 seasons at Miller Park/American Family Field. And it's going to be really cool, Todd. I imagine you're kind of interested in this too. They're bringing back a player from each team. That's sort of the tagline, but they're going to have more than 25 Brewers who have played at American Family Field on hand. And then a home run derby afterwards. So channeling the All-Star game, they're going to have an alumni home run derby. I have interviews after this with both Prince Fielder and Bill Hall, two of the guys who are going to be participating. Had a great time talking to them, reliving some of their memories and what they're looking forward to at this derby. But this is a really interesting event. First of its kind. Brewers haven't done anything like it before. And I am really excited to see it. Unfortunately, I will not physically be there because I'll be out of town with a youth baseball team. But I am so interested to see how it goes. You've got to be looking forward to this too, because I know you've covered a lot of these guys, and I'm sure it'll be cool to see some of them. What's going through your head as you're thinking about that Friday game?
Well, as we know, I don't like to work for free, and I am coming in on my off day to help cover this thing. So
you are a saint, Todd Rosiak, a saint.
I am. I mean, honestly, I worked that first Miz start I wasn't scheduled for, the one that you missed as well.
Yes,
came in and happily did that. So. I kid. I mean, I am not scheduled to work, but I'm definitely going to come in. I think Kurt's doing the game, and I'll cover the home run derby. But it's not going to be work. Let's be honest. I mean, it's going to be great to see all these old guys, older guys, former players, I should say. So many of them. I need to see the complete list, but so many of them I was able to cover over the course of my 15 years, and some of them gotten to know pretty well. Was able to reunite with Carlos Gomez in Miami a couple weeks ago, and that was a lot of fun. I know he'll be back, and he's in the home run derby. Prince Fielder, have only seen him once since he left after the 2011 season. That was several years ago for the Wall of Honor thing, I think it was. Walk of Fame. The Walk of Fame. Niger's always a blast. You know, Casey McGee. Corey Hart, I think Eddie Cedar, always one of my all-time favorites. Randy Wolf, George Kitaris. It's just going to be like old home week. So it should be a lot of fun, and I need to give the Brewers a lot of credit. I don't really know how the idea germinated, but I have a pretty good idea. And I think what happens is really they just do like these brainstorming sessions, and people come to the table with ideas. And I'm not sure whose idea this was. Maybe it was a collaboration, but – it just sounds to me like something where like, hey, what if, you know, and started putting two and two together and started figuring it out. And lo and behold, they made it a reality. I think it's something that's going to be really cool. I don't know what other franchises do this. Probably not many, if any. And to be able to bring so many fan favorites back and to have guys who are willing to take part and compete. Because let's be honest, part of this, the guys who are going to be in the home run derby, there's still ego. There's still pride involved in this. And these guys don't want to go out there and look like schlubs, you know. We all remember them at the peak of their playing days and their physical capacities. And you know, these guys are competitors down to their core, and they want to get out there and they want to win. So I think it's going to be fun to watch these guys take swings. I saw up close Carlos Gomez hit about a 440-foot shot in Miami. Ron looked pretty good from the video I saw at Dodger Stadium. I can only imagine that Eric Thames will be ready to go. I mean, every time we see him on the scoreboard at American Family Field, he looks like he's bigger than he was the last time, and I mean that in a good way. He looks like he should be in some bodybuilding contests. So Prince Fielder, you know, is going to be raring to go. It should be a lot of fun, and who knows, maybe Tony Plush will be able to tickle one or two over the wall as well.
Tony Plush, Nigel Morgan, and Giovanni Gallardo are the two I really want to know how they end up doing. Gallardo, of course, was a great hitting pitcher, but still a pitcher, so we'll see how that goes. A little unfair advantage to get Gomez to take those swings in Miami, Brawny in LA, getting a chance to warm things up a little bit. We saw a video of Prince Fielder at the East-West game in Alabama in June. He participated in a home run derby and won it and looked amazing. I asked him about that. You'll hear that in the interview afterwards. All of these guys can swing a little bit. Keon Broxton was just in independent baseball up until, I want to say, 2023. Like he's not that far removed from baseball. All these guys are going to be able to hit a little bit. And you're right, they're not gonna want to get offered. It's gonna be super fun. Between the cribbage board and the home run derby, a huge year for Brewers ideas. Great ideas coming out of the Milwaukee Brewers organization. real quickly before we get to three up, three down, we have to talk. That's the Brewers' past. We could talk about their future a little bit with the draft this weekend, or I should say this last weekend, I guess, at this point into Monday. We saw Andrew Fisher of Tennessee. He's a third listed as a third baseman, played a lot of first base this year at Tennessee. His one season with Tennessee had, of course, a very good year. He's now the Brewers' first round draft pick. Brady Ebel, who, speaking of this Dodger series, signed his contract. I don't think we have numbers yet on that, but a high schooler out of California, his father on the coaching staff, longtime baseball coach Dino Ebel, and this is his son, his 17-year-old son. I think he has not yet turned 18, so he's one of the first big signings from this class. Technically a first rounder because he went as a competitive balance pick. So a couple of interesting names. Seems like their idea is just to draft guys in those first 10 rounds that they like, and then kind of shoot the moon 11 through 20 with high school guys and see what kind of money is left over, and then try to bring in as many of those high end high school guys as they can and sign them away from their college commitments. Anything about the draft that jumps out at Utah and all of your coverage that you want to, that really struck you?
Well, I mean, just drafting the college bat in the first round and going all the way back to 2018. Since 2018, they've done that. Bryce Terang was the last high schooler they drafted in the first hitter in the first round. And you rattle off some of those names and it's like, wow. Yeah. So that it fell right into their laps. The guy's a competitor, obviously a really talented player. They're going to start him out at third base, which I think makes sense. You know, with Brock Wilkins still kind of being up in the air, and I'm not by any means, you know, writing him off. He's definitely going to be in the picture as well. But between those two guys, I would think that the Brewers would be able to get at least one guy who, moving forward, you know, a couple years from now, hopefully you can plug and play and get some good production and maybe go get back to, you know, the kind of prototypical major league third baseman that the Brewers have really not had for a long period of time. There's been dribs and drabs over the course of time, but really not since Aramis Ramirez have the Brewers had a guy that they've been able to roll out there every day and know they're going to get 30 and 100 out of. So, you know, to me, Fisher makes perfect sense. He's a good pick. I would expect, you know, we're still waiting this to see when he will sign, but all indications are that he'll probably sign a somewhat of an underslot deal. And then that again works to the Brewers' advantage when they can take that extra money and try to entice some of these guys in rounds 11 through 20 to put the pen to paper. I think Underwood is the kid's name, the kid who's going to go to Georgia Tech. That's a very intriguing name. And I think somebody that they're really going to have to put the full court press on, or they're doing that now and really going to have to throw some serious money at to get him to sign. But you gotta tip your cap to the Brewers. What they've done over the last several years has worked, and they've been able to mine some really good talent as a result of it.
Yeah, the Underwood taken with the 12th round pick. So if they don't sign him, there's really nothing hurt by that. For those who know the slot system, it's really about those first 10 rounds. You've got to sign those guys or you lose that slot money from your bonus pool. So it doesn't quite apply to 11 through 20. You can't go over $150,000, which of course they'd have to do for some of those guys, some of those high end talents. But that money that overage applies to the bonus pool, but not signing them doesn't hurt you. So that's why it's so interesting to see what happens with guys 11 through 20. Those are the more flyers, the pie in the sky. If they sign them, it's a big time bonus. I don't think we're going to have a situation like last year where they didn't sign one of their top 10 guys, as was the case with Chris Lavonis, who went to Wake Forest. That hurt them a lot more than missing out on an 11 through 20 guy. So I am interested to see when these guys sign and for what money, because that will dictate how many of the guys below the 10th round that they can bring in. A lot of Wisconsin guys getting taken. A lot of Wisconsin guys. In fact, I'll save that for three up, three down. We had just a huge crop. 11 guys from the state of Wisconsin getting taken in this draft. We'll move to that now, though. Let's go to some of the more granular details from the week. It is our weekly segment, Three Up, Three Down. And again, just a reminder, after this, I've got Prince Fielder, and Bill Hall, conversations with both of those gentlemen late this week. We're talking Derby, home run Derby. We're talking looking back at their careers, some great some great highlights. Bill Hall had some great memories from some of his more memorable home runs, and can't wait to share that with you. But Todd, if you don't mind, I'll go first and finish my thought on the big leaguers from the state of Wisconsin. We had two first rounders from Wisconsin, exceedingly rare stuff. This is coming off a year in which JD Dix was taken in the first round straight out of Whitefish Bay High School. This year, we had Gavin Keelan from Milton High School. He was at Tennessee, taken with the 13th overall pick by the San Francisco Giants. And that's really just where getting started. Mitchell Voigt, selected by the New York Mets. That was sort of a competitive balance pick. Hard to explain, but some of the big spending teams don't get to pick until much later. And that was the case with the Mets. So their first pick is a kid out of Michigan, a second baseman who also played at Whitefish Bay High School, Mitchell Voigt. Actually, at jsonline.com, I wrote this week about the success that Whitefish Bay specifically has had. Brady Council, you know that name, the son of former Brewers manager and player Craig Council. He went in the 10th round to the Arizona Diamondbacks, where Craig Council, by the way, has had some success. NLCS MVP. So that was a cool story. Peter Kusow, right out of Arrowhead High School, the one high school kid taken straight out of high school. I chatted with him this week, have a story coming. He has signed with the New York Mets, got a really nice overslot deal as a 4th round pick. I mean, there's just so many names. There's Will Vierling, who played at Homestead and ended up at Murray State, and Jacob Hartlaub, who was at Martin Luther and ended up at Ball State. Like, the number of Wisconsin guys getting picked, and we talk about it every year about how Wisconsin baseball has improved. Nate Snead, I forgot about him. South Milwaukee, he was the last pick on day one of the draft coming out of Tennessee. He's a big leaguer now too. The Yankees took Rory Fox out of Catholic Memorial, and the list goes on and on. Just a really cool a cool thing that Wisconsin has found its way on the map. 11 kids getting taken in this draft. I thought that was really fun. All right, Todd, what do you got? What's your first one for 3 Up, 3 Down?
I was kind of going through the mailbag and doing the mailbag the other day, and this question came up a few times, and it's something that I still don't have the answer to. I'm going to effort to get the answer to it. But the Jacob Mizorowski Rookie of the Year conversation.
Oh, boy.
If you look at the odds, you know, from the various places, he's already overtaken Drake Baldwin, Madison's own, with the Atlanta Braves as the favorite moving forward. And you got to think, if he keeps pitching the way that he has, that he would kind of be the runaway at this point. So let's say that he does win Rookie of the Year. Do the Brewers benefit from that? Do they get a draft pick because of that? We need to find that out, and that's what I'm going to try to do this week, because it is definitely worth investigating. I know, you know, some of the beliefs are that the player has to be on the roster on opening day. I don't know necessarily that's the case. What, you know, like Skeens was not on the roster last year on opening day for the Pirates. Did they wind up getting an extra pick?
No, they did not.
Okay, so that I want to find out the answer definitively one way or the other to this question, and that's what we will look at this week. But just discussing that anyway, I mean, the fact that Miz is, you know, already the front runner for Rookie of the Year, 5 starts in, it's just remarkable. And of course, we can remember the last time a Brewer won Rookie of the Year was pandemic year 2020, Devin Williams.
Yeah, I could tell you pretty certainly, unless something has changed, that they will not get a draft pick for Mizorowski, because you really need him up there at the beginning of the year or in the first couple weeks of the season. So that's not going to happen. What he will get, it'll work out better for Mizorowski than the Brewers, is he'll get a full year of service time, which is not really what the Brewers were protecting against here to begin with, but they were trying to keep him out of Super 2 status. I can't speak unequivocally that that's what they were trying to do, but it sure lined up when they called him up as a means of avoiding Super 2. And now that's not going to matter, because he's going to get the full year of service time, and it's just going to count as one full year, and that'll be one less year down the line that he is under team control. But, you know, if he's going to pitch this dominantly and lead this team into the playoffs on a potentially deep playoff run, I think absolutely everyone and their brother would make that trade. So that's fine. It is a weak Rookie of the Year class. There just aren't a lot of guys. And Drake Baldwin is a very nice player, and obviously is a Madison guy. I'm following him and hoping for the best, but he's not even like the full-time catcher for Atlanta. You know, he's splitting time with Murphy. So I think it's going to be Mizorowski's to lose. He's certainly the betting odds favorite, as you mentioned. Even like, you know, Caleb Durbin and Isaac Collins are going to be in there. Like, these are guys who legitimately have a Chad Patrick legitimately should get rookie of the year votes at this point. That's just how, not to disparage them, but that's just kind of where the class is at. That's kind of how weak it is. There's Augustin, you know, Ramirez with the Marlins. There's a couple other guys, but Mizorowski, barring something unforeseen, I know it's only five starts, feels pretty like, I wouldn't say likely, but I don't know, kind of likely that he's going to be the rookie of the year. It's kind of wild. Speaking of Mizorowski, here's my number two. I want to get your take on what you saw from Ken Rosenthal speaking to Mizorowski in the dugout at the All-Star game, because this made some waves. There was an interview after it came out of the game, and it was, as you might expect, he was mentioning, oh, some people didn't even want you here. And you know, like, how has that been for you? How have the players reacted to you? I thought Mizorowski answered it very well. He's not a guy who's going to give you long answers. It's pretty short. So he answered it. And then Rosenthal came back to that question and asked it again, like, kind of looking for a different answer. I have such deep respect for Ken Rosenthal. You know, I thought it was a little bit of an awkward interview, and it certainly read like he's trying to dig to, like, get some dirt, get some juice, like, oh, have the players been mean to you, you know, that sort of thing. And again, Mizorowski handled it fine, but I know a lot of Brewers fans were upset with that. It didn't strike me in the moment as being like that awkward. It was just, I don't know, just one of those things where maybe he needed a bunch more questions, and in-game interviews are already dicey, but did you see that? Do you have any thoughts on how that transpired?
Well, I think that you hit on the key point is Miz is very clipped in his responses. He's not going to typically give you more than like one sentence, maybe two sentences if you're lucky. And, you know, Rosenthal's trying to, number one, get answers to questions. Number two, he's trying to fill airtime. Uh-huh. And obviously, you know, high profile, you know, interview during a high profile event. I don't blame him, and I'm not surprised that he tried to come back to it. I certainly don't think there was anything malicious about it either. It's just the hot topic. It was. And so I can understand why Brewers fans would maybe be upset. I don't think it's a big deal. I did find it interesting that, you know, some of the players out in the pod sphere and so forth, Eric Hosmer, I know, blasted Rosenthal on social media about it. And hey, everybody's entitled to their opinion. Players obviously are going to have a different perspective than fans. But I, to me, much ado about nothing. Ken's the utmost ultimate professional, Hall of Famer. Give the guy every benefit of the doubt. He did nothing wrong there. It's fine.
Yeah. All right. What do you got for number two?
I was actually again, and kind of in my investigative mode. I haven't gotten an answer to this question either. It kind of struck me. This is typically around the time of year where we start thinking about the 2026 schedule. I would anticipate that an announcement would probably be coming sometime soon. I don't have anything concrete on that, but it's always fun to kind of look ahead and, you know, wonder what might be, you know, what might be awaiting the Brewers. You know, they wind up getting chosen for one of these marquee games, you know, one of these special event games, because I think they're one of a very small handful of teams now that has not participated in any of these. I don't know which one it would be. Hey, let's go overseas. You know, like, are there any overseas games planned next year? I'm all for that. Let's go Journal Sentinel. But I think it would be fun to kind of get them on that, and that, again, on a national stage, and, you know, maybe play a game in a unusual place, a place that they're not usually accustomed to playing. It's just kind of fun to think about. You know, we're obviously in the moment, and the Brewers are playing great, but it's never too early to think ahead to 2026.
Yeah, maybe that's coming up. Man, how much can we cram into a 2-week window if you're the Milwaukee Brewers? You've got the All-Star game, the draft. I mean, this is baseball wide, but then this Dodgers, this winning streak, maybe the schedule, you know, all kinds of stuff coming up. Alumni home run derby. It is a lot. All right, what is my number two? My number three, Quinn Priester. Like, you again, like, and I feel like I keep saying this, but like, similar to Caleb Durbin and Isaac Collins, I was sure if everybody stayed healthy that Quinn Priester would not keep his spot in the rotation. There were too many starting pitchers, and now I don't even think about it. Like, he's so good. He had another tremendous outing against the Dodgers in a shutout performance. I mean, he is a genuine dude, and I just don't know how I'm going to find a way. Todd, I'll find a way, but I am trying to find the pathway of how I can be critical of a Brewers pitching personnel decision ever again, because I really thought this trade did not make sense to me. And And I mean, I thought there's no way they can't turn a guy who has that level of big league success, which is to say not a lot, into a genuine, excellent starting pitcher midway through a season, right? They can't do it. And yet it's happening right before our eyes. He is so confident. He looks so good. I don't know. I don't know how we can doubt the Brewers ever again when it comes to pitching personnel. They just have some magic alchemy, at least for now, until other teams catch up. They have something that other teams don't have, and it is the reason they are one of the best teams, again, coming into Sunday night, tied for the best record in baseball. That has a lot to do with it. Crazy stuff.
Indeed. I'll wrap up with I was kind of curious. The other day, I started doing a little bit of digging and looking at some numbers. Jackson Chourio. Through 98 games last season, I'll just list off his line. So, like, you know, this point of this of the year last year, we all know that he had the first 2 months that were just atrocious, started bouncing back in early June. At this point in time last year, he's hitting .249, 9 homers, 37 RBI, .687 OPS, 12 stolen bases, 109 total bases. As of right now, Jackson Chourio is hitting .265, 16 homers, 62 RBI, .752 OPS, 17 stolen bases, and if you bear with me 1 second, 189 total bases. So, you know, you think about the total body of work this year, and you're like, you know, Chourio is playing well. You know, is he tremendously better than last year? At this point in time, yes, he is. And I'm going to be interested to see if he can, again, turn it on down the stretch like he did last year. You know, if you look at the numbers, he is now 3 homers and 3 RBI behind Christian Yelich for the team lead in both categories. Sneaky, at good year. And if you figure he, you know, continues to play as he has, he's going to wind up with, you know, somewhere probably what Contreras did last year without – quite the average, you know, so probably 25-ish homers, 85, 90 RBI, you know, 25 stolen bases maybe. Pretty good year. So Bears watching here moving forward what he's going to do.
Yeah, I said this last week. I said this to somebody. I think he's going to continue to tear it up. I think his second half is going to be dynamite, and maybe we haven't seen quite that unlocked full bore Chourio that we saw at flashes last year in the second half, but wouldn't surprise me if we see it, and imagine that extra additive to what he's already doing. He's 21 years old. Like, people just got to remember that. It's crazy. It's crazy how solid and professional he has been at that age. Okay, so that'll do it for 3 Up, 3 Down. A couple things we did not talk about. William Contreras had an amazing catch behind home plate on Friday night in Los Angeles. Just sort of a reminder of how good he is defensively and what he brings to the table, even though offensively it hasn't been there. And, you know, then he went ahead and hit a 2-run double. So I don't want to completely discount the offense. He's just so invaluable to them as a defender. And that's part of the reason why we just aren't seeing him getting rest, even though he is a little bit dinged up. Garrett Spain, Brewers minor leaguer at the Biloxi Shuckers, had a fun highlight early in the weekend. He had avoided a tag at home plate with some ninja moves on a slide and caught the attention of the baseball world. Wrote about it at jsonline.com. Just a fun thing going on in the minor leagues. We didn't talk a lot about Tyler Black being back. I am interested to see how he does. I still have a little bit of hope for him. It's been kind of a downhill slide for him with injuries and just ineffectiveness, you know, over the last couple of years. So I'm really interested to see what happens with him going forward. One more note of appreciation for Trevor Megill. He only gets to face the one batter, Stephen Kwan, in the All-Star game, but he has just been something special. And he's finding a way to get a lot of soft contact in addition to throwing triple digits. You know, he has plenty of strikeouts. He's got 43 strikeouts in 35 innings. But it's not, even though he throws that kind of heat, it's not about strikeouts necessarily with him. He is getting the contact that is allowing his defense to go to work and get some outs. So he's been really, really important and locking things down at the back end of the bullpen. All right, that'll do it for 3 Up, 3 Down. We now move into a little look at the history of the Milwaukee Brewers franchise. It is my weekly segment of Brewers History, Remember When. Todd, you know what we had in this All-Star game? We had a tie. We had a tie game. So we have to go back to the last time the All-Star game ended in a tie. And that is, of course, July 9th, 2002. Todd, What did you do during All-Star weekend when it was in town? You were not covering the Brewers at this point, but I have to think you were engaging a little bit with what was going on. What were your, do you have any 2002 All-Star weekend memories?
So let's see. That would have been, I would have been preparing for to cover Packer training camp because I was covering the Packers at that point, which is crazy to think. I did attend the Home Run Derby as a fan, and still am amazed at the home runs that were being hit by Sosa and all those guys, like two thirds of the way up the scoreboard. It was incredible. I remember how disgustingly humid and hot it was. Mm-hmm. It kind of rained a little bit. My ticket was in like one of those little ticket holder things, and it got messed up, which I was not happy about. Those are my memories of that event. And of course, who can forget the Bud Selig, you know, the tie and everything, the reaction. So I don't know if that's what you were going for, but that's what stands out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of that stuff resonates, I think, for a lot of people. So the funny thing going into the All-Star game is that Bob Brenly, the manager from the Diamondbacks, who was the NL manager, he replaced Tom Glavine, who'd gotten hurt, with Vicente Padilla of the Philadelphia Phillies. And the point, he said in a press conference, is he needed to get somebody who could soak up some innings in case things got tied at the end. So he goes with Padilla. And hilariously, Vicente Padilla did not end up soaking up innings, and that's part of the reason why this game had to end. But you know, they are tied. It's actually a crazy back-and-forth game. It's a very exciting game. But Bob Brenly had to inform Bud Selig in the middle of the 11th inning that he had nobody left to pitch if the game went to the 12th. Public address announcer tells fans, this game is not going to go any further than that. They start booing. They were chanting, Bud sucks. It was, unfortunately, Bud Selig really took the brunt of this, of a situation that I don't think he had a lot of control over at the time. But fans are throwing beer bottles, seat cushions on the field. Nobody wanted to see it end in a tie. It was the first year of the Ted Williams Award as the MVP trophy. Ted Williams had just passed away. So they named the All-Star Game MVP after Ted Williams. He had died the previous Friday. And they didn't give it to anybody. They decided not to award the MVP award because it ended in a tie. So nobody got the first Ted Williams award, which was interesting. Like you said, 91 degrees, humid as all get out. People hitting the slide. That's the night before in that home run derby. Home runs hitting the slide. They had to close the roof, though, because of thunderstorms. Rain was coming through the roof. The roof still leaked really badly at that point. It probably still leaks, but not to the degree that it was early, those early years. And there was some talkage of labor stoppage going on, too. I think there were some talks in Chicago, so that was kind of looming over everything. It was kind of a cursed weekend, actually, which is unfortunate because the game itself, there were some crazy good memories. Two outs in the first, everybody remembers Torrey Hunter robbing Barry Bonds of a home run. Probably remember that Barry Bonds then homered in the second to the second deck in the third, hitting one out. That made it 4-0 National League. Wisconsin's own Damian Miller, future Milwaukee Brewers baseball player, Damian Miller had doubled home a run to make it 5-2 in the fifth. Miller actually had two doubles in the game. He might have won the Ted Williams Award, actually, if the NL had hung on. Byung-Hyun Kim, Arizona sort of sinker, submarine style pitcher. He had given up some big homers in 2001 playing for the Diamondbacks. He comes in, he gives up single, double in the seventh, and the AL actually comes back to take a 6-5 lead. But then the NL gets it back. Lance Berkman, two run single in the bottom of the seventh. NL leads 7-6. Omar Vizquel, RBI triple in the top of the eighth to retie the game at 7. Actually, Garrett Anderson had grounded out weakly to second base with the infield in. For the second out, the AL could have taken a lead there, and that would have changed history. Rob Dan ends up striking out Randy Wynn, so we're still tied at 7, and that's where we stayed. Nobody scored going through the 11th. Jose Hernandez, the Brewers' shortstop, had a chance to win it, but he struck out, ending the 10th with a runner at second base. Sean Green stolen second. Sean Green, who, of course, had four homers at Miller Park in 2002. When Benito Santiago struck out, ending the 11th, that was it. Game was over. Padilla only threw 25 pitches. Actually, Smoltz had thrown 8 before him. Padilla was on regular rest, so I don't really quite remember. I don't understand. He had thrown 119 pitches in his previous start, but that was 5 days earlier. So I don't quite know why he was unavailable to go a little bit further. But that's the AL was on to their last pitcher, Freddy Garcia as well. Eric Gagne, Trevor Hoffman, both future Brewers at that point. They both gave up hits, but did get credit for holds in that All-Star game for the National League. It was the first tied All-Star game since 1961 in Boston. That one had ended in a tie because of rain. This was obviously, other than the roof leaking, there was no rain to be had in this particular one. And that was, of course, kind of a black eye for baseball, for Bud Selig. There was just a lot going on. Tensions were high in baseball, and you know, they changed it to make it count so that the winning team got home field advantage in the World Series for a while. That was very silly. It proved very silly over time. It's now back to where it should be as an exhibition. But I don't know. There's also a lot of talk of all the pitchers who didn't play in the 2025 All-Star Game. Maybe people are getting discontented with the idea of an exhibition. Stay tuned for that. But I like that this one doesn't count. I never liked that sort of knee-jerk reaction to what happened in 2002. All right, that'll do it for Remember When. That was a long one. We'll now close it down the way that we do every week, and that is with, of course, Todd's Take of the Week. Here it is.
Doing some more investigative work, as I tend to do, I'm looking at strength of schedule moving forward in the major leagues, and Brewer fans will not be happy to note that the Brewers have the fourth toughest schedule the rest of the way. They have 8 games against the Cubs right at the top of that list, but then you've also got games in Toronto. You've got 3 against the Phillies coming in, 3 against the Mets coming in, and closing out right at the end of the season with 3 at the Padres. There are some easy opponents remaining on the schedule as well, including 6 against the Pirates. You've got 3 against the Nationals in Washington coming up right around the trade deadline. Can't pencil those in as wins. They're listing 3 games at Atlanta against the Braves as easy games for the Brewers. I guess if you go by the record, that would definitely count. You get the Marlins coming in, you've got the Angels coming in, and then you've got 4 against the Diamondbacks as well coming in. So I don't know if this has been updated before or with Sunday's games, but right now the strength of schedule is 5-13 for the Brewers. So they're slotted right between the Orioles and the Mets in 4th place strength of schedule. So something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, it won't be easy. But when you have when you're 19 games above 500 going into, you know, the final stretch of July, you built yourself a cushion. And I still think this team is going to be hard pressed to catch the Cubs. We'll see with all that head to head coming up. We'll see exactly where they stand. Even though they're tied, I would still lean on the Cubs as the probable winner of the NL Central. But it's becoming less and less certain to me every day, obviously, as this team has continued to win baseball games. So we will see. 10 wins in a row. We'll see if they can get to that George Webb threshold. 2 more wins needed to get to 12 in a row. This town is Brewers fever's growing. It's getting up there already here in late July. We'll have an uptick if we can get some George Webb's burgers out of it. He's Todd Rosiak. You can find everything he has at jsonline.com. Todd, any last thoughts before I send you away?
Yeah, I have a last thought. I've got to go pack to go to Seattle.
I think I lost Todd right as he did he log off to go pack this very second. That would not surprise me. He will be in the Pacific Northwest. I'm jealous. I've never been to Seattle. I would love to go to see this series against the Mariners. Meanwhile, I'm going to move into my interviews with Prince Fielder and Bill Hall. Both of them will be at American Family Field on Friday the 25th, that game against the Marlins. Again, that's a 3:00. That's a weird afternoon start time with lots and lots of fanfare. You've got autograph signings and guys hanging out before the game, and certainly this home run derby afterwards is going to be wild. So hope you enjoyed. I certainly enjoyed catching up with these Brewers legends, Bill Hall and Prince Fielder. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Microbrew. We will chat with you again very soon next week. Bye-bye, everybody. My guest does not need an introduction for Brewers fans. It's Bill Hall, one of the great players of the past 25 years. He will be here along with many other Brewers alumni on July 25th, and they'll be participating in an alumni home run derby. Thank you for joining me, sir. Can't wait to see this derby. How much bat swinging have you done? Are you preparing in any way, shape, or form for this particular event?
Do you normally
swing a bat? Like, what's your process there?
So I'm in the travel ball scene, and I train every day. I literally teach hitting every day.
Nice.
So I'm at the facility right now. I'm in my office right now, and I start training in a few minutes here, about 15 minutes here. But yeah, I didn't want to hurt myself more than embarrass myself, so I've been taking about 100 to 150 swings a day off the tee, getting my body back in shape. Been doing that for about 2 weeks since I've heard about it. A couple people are, kind of put a little pressure on me to, go out there and perform well. So I'm having to kind of lock in and get the swing in order for sure.
Yeah, you were kind of. I don't mean to make this sound just. You're kind of the elder statesman. I mean, you're only a couple years older than
I think. I am the oldest of the group that's performing in the Derby. As I was saying, Ryan is only what 2 years out of playing, so that's when he should probably come around pretty fast if he's doing anything at all.
Yeah,
and him and Corey Hart have kind of been on a little small text thread a little bit.
Nice.
Kind of talking about kind of how we were going to prepare and some of the things that was going on for sure.
A little trash talking, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Ron's been out for, this is his fifth year away, but like he does not look like he's been out of baseball long. You know, I'm sure he's
going to
be fine.
Yeah.
I've seen video of Prince Fielder swinging. He also looks just fine.
Yeah. So I've seen the home run derby at the East West All-Star game in Birmingham. Those swings definitely made me get in the cage even a little bit more. I upped my amount of swings per day just so I can make sure I'm ready for those guys.
Love that. you said you're involved in travel ball. So where are you? What are some of the things that you've been doing here in retirement?
Yeah, I'm in Charlotte now. We started kind of our own branch of travel ball. We have our own name with our own teams under our own umbrella. It's called Arena, as you can see on my shirt right now. Yeah. But yeah, we got about, I mean, we're only, I'm about to be 2 years in, coming up in October. It'll be our second year, and we're already up to like 60 teams. I work out of an amazing facility. It's definitely one of the top five facilities to come train for baseball in the country. It's amazing out there right now. It's just how many cages, how much technology and all that we have. So that part of it is extremely fun. I get to stay in the game. I get to pass down all the information that I learned over the years and all the things that I messed up that could have made me even a better player than I was. I coached that part of it really hard. I also coached two teams as well. I'm on the youth side, so I'm trying to raise more of the youth up, you know, teaching them the proper way to swing and, you know, we do have showcase style teams, which are like 14 through 18, but I'm on the youth side trying to get our youth side. And, you know, it's a pretty good thing to get coached by a former big leaguer that has no kids of his own on any of the teams. So it's a pretty special team.
I imagine with the draft, this is a big year. If it's like programs around Wisconsin where you get a couple kids a year, have you had kids that have gone through and gotten drafted?
No, not yet. Like, fairly new. Why my phone keeps flipping down? We're fairly new, and so all of our older kids, we to have people kind of getting ready to go into the draft and things like that, we'd be having to take from other organizations and stealing kids. It's just kind of not how we're going about our business. We want to build our organization as natural and as organic as possible. But we do have some talent that will be very close in the next few years. I mean, the owner of this place, Sons, Leo just turned nine. He plays on my 11U team, and he was on my 10U team as an 8-year-old. And when I got him, he had zero over the fence home runs. So since he works with me pretty much daily, he's got 35 in the last year and a half over the fence home runs.
All right.
So he's a pretty talented kid. He's a really talented kid.
I want to talk about some of your over the fence home runs in a second, but I also want to ask about a couple other things. One, I told this to Prince Fielder as well. I would love to see CC Sabathia there for the Derby. I'd love to see him swing.
Yes.
He, of course, going into the Hall of Fame later this year. And I wanted to get your thoughts on what you remember when he joined the Brewers in 2008 and just the presence he brought, you know, everything and the aspects that you think made him, you know, ultimately made him a Hall of Famer. But even in that moment, how crucial he was for the Brewers.
Oh, it was amazing. Me and him were already really good friends. I mean, we went on family vacations during the offseason together. My mom still talks to his mom, if not weekly, every bi-weekly. So they're in a great, you know, still amazing relationship. So that part was really cool. So when he came over, obviously, it was at a time when we needed somebody to step in and, you know, really get us over the hump. And that last 2.5 to 3 weeks where he was performing on 3 days rest was absolutely insane. My favorite CC story about all, you know, throughout that whole year was it was day of the tiebreaker game, right? So we're playing the game, right? So the day before we get to play, obviously we had to pack just in case we needed to go to New York, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm rolling up to the field with my suit on, with my bag ready to travel. He's walking up in his Jordan sweats with no bag. And I say, what are you doing? Like, why you don't, you're not, he's like, we ain't going nowhere.
Ooh.
And I went, okay. And I knew he was game ready and game on. And obviously, he went out there and performed with the mentality that he brought into the ballpark, that we're not traveling anywhere. I didn't bring any clothes. I'm not packing. I didn't pack anything. We're staying here. We're going to win this game. And we're going to win the wild card. So that was like one of the, and, you know, just kind of, we all kind of have that confidence. You have to have that confidence about yourself. But just seeing confidence on a, you know, a Hall of Fame style level, you know, with all these guys that I've got to play against and, you know, and with over the years, just kind of seeing that Hall of Famer style mentality. And he definitely had that, I'm sure, from day one of getting drafted. And I mean, obviously, even as an amateur before getting drafted. So he's always carried that I dominate, I win attitude into every performance that he goes out and performs. So, yeah, you just could see the writing on the wall when, and it just kind of taught me, you know, you would think that you couldn't learn things. Well, we would expect not to learn things from other big leaguers that are like that valuable. But I learned a valuable lesson that day, and another level of confidence and preparation and belief in yourself.
I think you've probably told this story before, but how did you get to know him before he even joined the Brewers?
Just through baseball, just kind of, we all through the minor leagues, we all respect one another, kind of finding out where each other came from and just kind of just bonded with each other upon first meeting. We had a lot of similarities through our families and all that, kind of raised, be how we were raised and all of that. So, you know, you just find your bonds with people and relate with them a lot, you know, better than some others, for sure.
Yeah. You had a couple big time hits in this series in 2008 in St. Louis, this 4-game sweep. Sabathia pitched in that one as well. But that's one of when I think of your career, I know a lot of people think about that home run on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
But to me, there's the Cardinals series, and then there's even long before Mother's Day, this back to back wins against the Reds in 2004.
Yeah.
The Brewers staged this huge rally. You hit the walk off homer, then a walk off bunt the next day.
Very next night.
Yeah. What do you remember? We'll start with those Reds games. What do you remember from that? That's you know, earlier on in your career, but that sticks out to me. Those Brewers teams haven't quite arrived yet, but that was an amazing 2-day stretch for you.
Reds fans hate me. I performed really well against those guys. I've actually seen articles that are still, you can like research Bill Hall and nice. Reds, and it's a bunch of like forums where Red fans are giving me a bunch of kind of hate messages and talking about me. I performed really well, but I do remember the home run into the walk-off bunt, the squeeze. But I remember the home run, though, being me finally believing that I was a part of like the big leagues. Clearly I had been there playing, but it was the first time I call it risk taking when you're swinging, just kind of getting to your 2-0 count and going, okay, I'm going to try to, you know, get the barrel out front here, do what I've done. I know how to do this in this situation, but I was a little more afraid of it, you know, just kind of being that rookie and still kind of, you know, trying to learn the league and not, you know, really completely believing how great you can be. And I remember that home run, I decided when I stepped out and I got that 2-0 count, I said, I'm going to try to end it. And I'm just going to try to land on time here. I'm not going to swing over swing, but I'm going to try to make sure I land on time so I can get the barrel out front here. And I remember I hit it, and it was one of the hardest balls I probably hit my whole career. Awesome. Yeah, I destroyed that ball, and it was like one of the greatest feelings. And then I remember like rounding the bases and go, okay, I belong. I'm here now. And I knew from there, I just started kind of, you know, believing that I could do all the things I'd done as an amateur and playing well, that I could perform the same way as a big leaguer.
And then just to touch on the Mother's Day home run briefly, does your mom still have the bat or some of the memorabilia from that day?
Absolutely. She has that pink bat. She has it mounted up with a big big picture of me and her when Mr. Mark presented us with the bat. He's in the picture, and it's a big picture and a big frame. But yeah, it's amazing for her. Every Mother's Day, she gets to kind of get famous again, because it's like the first thing ESPN shows on Mother's Day is that home run. Every year, I feel like, you know, that's going to be, you know, to infinity of Mother's Days. That's going to kind of be a part of the Mother's Day celebration, that home run. So it means a lot to me. It means even more to me to have her involved in that home run and getting that kind of recognition.
This is like somebody who, like Mariah Carey, writing a great Christmas song every year around this time.
Yep.
start getting out in the
DMs and all of my text messages start to blow up around Mother's Day every single year, with everybody kind of recognizing and remembering the day.
And then the Cardinals series, or just 2008 in general, going on that run, I think for a lot of people like myself, it's a really truly meaningful season, because it marks the first time in a generation. And you've been with a lot of Brewers teams that were just okay, to be charitable, and then, you know, you finally get on this team. maybe what was that season like for you? What do you remember about that year?
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. You know, we had started to kind of make it start to come together. I remember the 2006 season. I think that was our first year going 500. I think that was the year, right? We were starting to build, and you could just start to sense that, you know, I was starting to get a little better. Prince was getting better, and we could see Bronny was coming, JJ, Corey, all of that kind of young core was starting to kind of really believe and starting to gel as a team with all the, you know, the additions we added to it. And you could just start to see it come together, and we all knew we were that one piece away eventually, and obviously CC became that piece to help us down the stretch and really get those tough games but yeah, it was a fun season. I just remember just like I said, it was just going into spring training that year. It was a belief that we could do it, that we were going to make the playoffs, that we were about to break through and kind of change. And like you said, I got brought up in September of 2002. I think that was 106 loss or 105 loss season.
Yes.
And I remember coming up in September in the clubhouse, not being so happy to be in on a daily basis. And you know, they just kind of basically, you know, with me and Jinx and all those other guys just kind of let me kind of go into the clubhouse, be myself. Nobody put pressure on me. I didn't get a lot of rookie hazing. Kind of everybody just kind of let me. It was almost like I was getting, you know, being like a veteran in the locker room in year like 2 and 3 as JJ and Prince's and all these guys are starting to come up and get in the locker room. I kind of got anointed as a veteran in the locker room pretty fast. And, you know, that was pretty special, too. And just to kind of see all of us coming together and it all to gel in 2008. We should have, you know, definitely unfortunate that we played the team that won the World Series in the first series and couldn't pull off and go have a deep playoff run. But I just kind of look back at that time and know that I was, you know, pretty significant part of how the Brewers are looked at today as a perennial playoff team that's on the verge of hopefully winning a World Series. And I think they're well on their way as they're starting to get more and more talent coming through that, yeah, through the minor leagues and acquiring.
I know you have to go, so real quickly before I let you go, 50 Weeks Associate Manager, what do you think about that?
Oh, it's awesome. I think it's great. He, like I said, he stepped right out of the game and stepped right into the front office, right into the business side of baseball. And he's got a baseball brain. You know, he was quiet when he played, and you could just see him, but taking in a lot of information through his quietness. And, you know, he wasn't a loud rah-rah player, just kind of led by example most of the time. And to see him doing that and being all reserved in the dugout as I watch him now, it's just, he's the same as he played. He never really got rattled, never really got overly emotional, and stayed calm. And I'm sure the players are really responsive to him with that kind of mentality.
He's Bill Hall. You know him, of course. He'll be on hand July 25th at American Family Field with several other Brewers alumni swinging for the fences. Thank you for joining me, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My guest is Prince Fielder. You know him well. If you're a fan of the Milwaukee Brewers, one of the greatest power hitters the organization has ever seen. He will be back at American Family Field on July 25th, taking some swings again in the Home Run Derby, the Alumni Home Run Derby. Prince, as we record this, the All-Star Game has just happened. The Home Run Derby has just happened. You, of course, have won two of those, two Home Run Derbies. Kind of curious what goes through your head when you watch them now. Are you, are you a little bummed that you're not out there? Is it kind of cool to watch this event that you've won a couple times? What are you thinking as you're watching those guys swing for the fences?
I like watching it. It's a little different than the ones I did. I mean, I did my last year in 2015, but I don't know. I think I'm old school. I like just seeing guys hit home runs and seeing how far they go. I'm not, you know, I don't really care about the time so much, but it's very exciting. I think it's a little more exciting than mine, but you know, like I said, I'm into seeing seeing how far the balls go.
What is the key to winning a home run derby? What advice would you give somebody going through that that event?
I mean, I don't think there's much advice besides try to get a good pitch and hit it out. But I mean, I think just that, you know, once you get in the rhythm, try to just stay in that rhythm. I mean, I don't know. I think it's you have to do a home run derby first to actually understand what the feeling is. And then I think after that, then you can have a plan. You know what I mean? I think the first one, you just got to go there and see what it's like.
There was a video circulating not that long ago of you taking some swings in Alabama at that East West game. I'm kind of curious how you got connected with that, and if this is something you've done before, that you've participated in home run derby since your playing days ended.
Yeah, I did the one last year. They had the same East-West game last year at Cooperstown. Right. I did that one. Yeah, that's those are the only two times I swung the bat in my whole retirement. So I swung it those two times. That's about it.
Do you prepare for those? I mean, and I guess the extension is, will you be preparing for this one?
Probably not. I mean, I play tennis, so that's about all the. Nice. That's about it. I mean, no, I'm not. I mean, it's not a, you know, I might swing off the tee, but as far as like preparing, like, no, I don't need, I mean, no, probably not.
That's fine. Just go out there and hit it.
Yeah.
How does this impact you? How was your neck injury? Because I, you know, I guess for me, seeing the old fashioned violent Prince Fielder swing, you wonder.
I mean, yeah. I mean, when someone says I have 10 swings, the neck's fine, but 162 game schedule, no chance.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
As you, I mean, would you consider yourself one of the favorites coming into Milwaukee? Like, I want you.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I think so, but I think it's more about just, you know, having some fun. I mean, I'm not taking it that serious. You seem to be serious, like real. But I'm just, you know, I'm coming to have fun, hit a couple homers, make a couple fans cheer. You know, so, I mean, you know, if I win, I win. But I think, you know, being around the guys and having us out there, I think that's the big point. Just, you know, having the fans enjoying seeing us. Us old people hit some homers.
Not that old. You guys are younger than me. who's your primary competition? Or maybe a better question is, who are the guys you're really excited to see when you come back to Milwaukee here?
Oh, everybody. I mean, Bronny, Bill Hall, I mean, Corey. I mean, all those are my friends. So everyone, you know, I'm excited to see everyone.
Your son, Jaden, now a member of the Brewers organization, he has your swing, man. I don't know how. It clearly was passed down. What are you able to watch some of his games? Like, how do you sort of stay in touch with what he's doing? And
it's my son, so he calls me pretty a lot. So yep. I mean, he calls me about, you know, at least, shoot. I try to give him some space because he's growing up. But I mean, he calls me almost every other day, or we'll text or whatnot. So yeah, I've been keeping up with him a lot and just, you know, staying with him. Just, you know, whenever he needs, he doesn't need much, you know, much help. You know, I think he's kind of doing it on his own. So I'm just glad to see. You know, how he's going about his career and, you know, how serious that he is about it. So it's been a joy to be a part of.
And I believe your son Haven is going to San Diego State. Is that right? Is that next
Friday? Yes. As of now, yes. I think so. I think he might be transferring, but hold off. But yeah, San Diego State as of now.
Okay. So what else for Brewers fans want to know what you're up to now? But you've got two kids playing baseball at a pretty high level. What else have you been doing here in retirement?
Nothing. That's nothing. Just not nothing at all. Just watching them play and, you know, staying out the way. That's about it, man. Just relaxing.
That sounds fantastic.
It's great. It's wonderful.
One of your old teammates, Ricky Weeks, is now associate manager here with the Milwaukee Brewers. So you'll get to see. I am disappointed that he will not be participating in the Home Run Derby. He hit some prodigious ones. Some of the very same game as you. Are you surprised that he's here, that he is at this position in his career where he's, you know, he's kind of number two on the depth chart here in the coaching rank, Brewers?
I'm not surprised. No, I don't think so. I think obviously it's a great choice to have him on the team. I mean, he's one of the guys, you know, one of the best players for the Brewers have had. So, I mean, anytime you can get old, the guys who played before to come back and be a part of the team, I think it's always a great thing. So I'm just real happy for him.
One of the guys I would like to see in the Derby who I don't believe will be here is CC Sabathia.
You want to see him hit in the Derby?
I do. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
I bet you he could still strike some guys out too.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to know what you remember about him when he joined the team, because obviously he's got his Hall of Fame induction coming up soon. He always speaks very highly of you and Ricky and the other guys that were in that Brewers clubhouse. What sticks out when you think of his time in Milwaukee in 2008?
Oh man, it was legendary. I mean, not so much the, you know, how good he was doing. I think just him going out there every 3 days. That's like you know, that's something guys weren't doing. And for him to do it for a team that he, you know, he didn't know if he was going to sign long-term with us. So for him to do that on a year, you know, his contract year, to go out there and push himself like that was very, it helped us get to the playoffs. So, I mean, I'm forever grateful for him to come out there and really put his body on the line and, you know, try to see how far we can go. And he did that. And that was truly legendary.
Man, I'm still holding out hope that he shows up and then he ends up taking some swings. I don't think so. But what... I want to talk about some of the home runs from your career that you remember specifically, but going back to this particular event that the Brewers are holding, when they approached you, I mean, was that an automatic yes? Or, you know, I guess this is a first of its kind thing. So I don't know how much of the details were crystallized when they first came to you.
They
come together.
Yeah. They just text me. I did ask what the format was. I said, if it was more of like the old school, because the new one, I can't do that one. That's dangerous for me. So I asked what kind of format, and they said it was more like the old one. So I said, yes, yeah, that's no problem. But you know, as far as the timed, and I'm not even going to try that.
Yeah. When you say new one, you mean where there's a clock on you.
No.
Yeah. The format does change quite a bit. They try to keep it fresh, and sometimes a little hard to follow. So this one maybe a little more stripped down. Okay. So the home runs of your career that Brewers fans remember, I wonder if you're reminiscing with people talking about the great home runs of your career, I wonder which ones you go to first. I wonder if the inside the park home runs are the ones that maybe come up immediately, but what is it? What's number one on your home run, your personal home run highlight reel when you were with the Milwaukee Brewers?
I mean, I guess the walk-off one is pretty good. The walk-off when, you know, we all came to home plate. I think that one's probably the most one I think about just because that's the most one brought up to me. So probably that one. Yeah.
When you were, if you remember scripting that one, that was 2009 against the Giants, the bowling ball celebration.
Yeah.
Did you know that would cause ripples? You know, the Giants didn't love it. The Brewers fans adore it. I don't know if you knew in the moment that was going to be so celebrated. That was going to be the thing for you.
I guess. I know people didn't like it, but once I saw it on the MLB TV, I was like, oh, well. They gotta wear it because it's on MLB TV. You know, it's part of MLB now. So, but yeah, I saw. You know, I guess people were aggravated, but I mean, you know, they'll be all right.
I love it. Yeah. I can't believe they hit you with a pitch the following spring training. That is.
They picked the right guy. He didn't throw too hard. So
no, that's true. Barry Zito. Yeah, that is true. The inside the park homers are pretty cool, though. The fact that you have two of those in your career,
right.
do those stick out for you as well?
Sure. I mean, the fact that, yeah, I'm not a speedster and I have two inside the park, that's definitely a pretty cool thing. You know, I mess with my older son a lot. He's fast, so I always tell him, you know, joke around with him. But yeah, those two stick out. But I think the celebration one's probably the best. Sure.
What do you remember about that first home run? Do you still have that ball, the home run? Speaking of Ricky Weeks, you know, he hits his first home run.
Oh, that, I have it somewhere. I don't know, you know, stuff gets, you know, I never was the one to like keep a lot of stuff like that, but it's somewhere in the house. But yeah, that was a good day. That was a lot of fun, you know, hitting the home run that day with Rick. I think that was just a special moment. Yeah, me and Ricky went deep the same day, right? Yeah.
That's right. Against the Twins, 2005.
Yeah, that was special. That was really cool.
And then the your second home run's a walk-off winner against Pittsburgh. I think
that's
Jose Mesa, who gave up Robin Yount's 3,000th hit. So there's some more Brewers history right there.
Yeah.
What about your speaking of the All-Star game that just happened? What do you remember about that experience? You know, homering in Arizona, winning MVP. I know there was some controversy because you were the captain for the home run derby that year. There was a whole thing. What sticks out about that? I think that's 2011. What was that one like for you?
It was cool. I mean, you know, all the All-Star games, just, you know, me and my boys, I think that sticks out the most because those are, you know, one of the main reasons why I wanted to go just for them and do the home run derby, just because that's the only reason why they wanted to go. So that was just anytime I did that, that was just always the, you know, the main focus was just them and seeing how much fun they were having. So that's what sticks out there. And, you know, when I won the MVP, the All-Star game MVP that year, what was that? In Arizona. I just remember my boys fighting with the trophy, kind of. So they were both young, so that was a good, you know, that's good memories there too. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
What do you think of this last one where Kyle Schwarber gets the All-Star Game MVP for this new format that they had for to settle the tie versus Pete Alonso? Hitting one in the game. What do you think about that?
I think it's cool. I mean, you know, I think all the anything new is always cool. You know, I'm not going to be the old guy who has a problem with change. So I think, you know, everything they're doing in baseball is obviously working and it's a lot of fun to watch.
All right. Last question. Just how do you summarize your time in Milwaukee when you're asked what really resonates for you for those?
Yeah, you've got some good questions that I've never been really asked, but, I don't know. I think, you know, the time in Milwaukee is definitely like a, I would say more like a, you know, family experience, just because, like you said, with Ricky, I mean, me and Corey, both our kids kind of learned how to crawl at the same time type stuff. And, you know, I mean, we just kind of all grew up together while also, you know, having families at the same time. So I think there was just more of a, yeah, like a family, just more of a, is it, not that it's not like that on other teams. I just think when you come up with guys through the minor leagues like that, and you, I think it's a little more closer knit.
All right. Prince Fielder, slugger for the Milwaukee Brewers, one of the greats in franchise history. He'll be back July 25th. Thank you for joining me, sir. I really appreciate it.
All right, brother.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.